Blog Talk Radio.
From the Blog Talk Radio studio in the heart of Hudson County. Ladies and gentlemen, you know it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you the four-time award-winning politically direct, and I am New Jersey's premier journalist and top 100 Latino via the Latino Spirit Online magazine, Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here again as we continue on in the month of June. Weather's getting nicer. Certainly New Jersey reopening, I think, to its fullest capacity, I believe. Obviously joining across the river the city of New York. Great to see that, of course. And, I want to thank you all for listening from wherever and however you may be doing so throughout the Garden State. And, of course, all my friends across the U.S. of A. Now, you can write in the show's inbox anytime, ladies and gentlemen. It's politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, if you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic, I'd love to hear from you. Write to the show. I do answer emails promptly. So again, don't be shy. Write to me, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram. I've been lagging a little bit in updating the Instagram page for the show, ladies and gentlemen, but I will get to it, I promise. But you can always check out my own Instagram, at Professor Fernando Uribe. That's U-R-I-B-E. Tons of new followers, plenty of likes, and I know many of you enjoy my Instagram stories, whether it's about pro wrestling, politics, sports, anything going on right now in pop culture, or anything that's on my mind, really, whether it's a motivational quote, something inspirational. Hey, I always post it on my Instagram stories. Check it out. And again, make sure you follow me, at Professor Fernando Uribe. Also, hit me up on Twitter. Tons of new followers again this week, so I'm very happy about that. And also plenty of likes on all of my political observations, which is really what I think I relegate Twitter to in terms of my rants and what I think about today's political climate. I think that's pretty much what I use Twitter for, as I'm sure many of you do as well. Check it out, at No Filter Uribe. That's at No Filter Uribe. And for all of you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. Now, ladies and gentlemen, check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com. Again, proud to partner with Insider NJ as a sponsor of this podcast. here every week on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, www.insidernj.com for what I will always argue is the best coverage of today's political scene in the state of New Jersey. Nobody does it better than Insider NJ. Make sure you follow them on Twitter and also like them on Instagram. And I just want to say this again. I'm so proud to be a part of the Insider NJ team. Listen, it starts at the top. And I'm immensely grateful to the Graham family, specifically Michael Graham, who not just only cuts me a check, but the fact that he believes in this podcast and that he, along with management, really think that highly of me to keep supporting it. You know, when I started this podcast in January of 2018, I didn't know what to make of it, really, since I just started a local podcast in Hudson County. And that was going well. Wasn't sure if it would transition to the same type of success at the state level. But, hey, when you partner with Insider NJ and they want to partner with you, that makes a big, big difference. So I'm grateful to them. I'm grateful to my Insider NJ general manager, who I know he hates when I drop his name, but I love to do it anyway, Pete Onelia. I know I give Pete some headaches with some of my broadcasts and what some people might say about what I'm saying on the air, but I am grateful to Pete for his patience and his support every week here on, once again, Blog Talk Radio. And I can't say enough, really. Listen, I'm having played organized sports, I understand the importance and the necessity of teamwork. It's as simple as that. And I'm proud to be a part of an incredible team here with Insider NJ. I don't always like my teammates. I'll be the first one to tell you that. You know, I think I say it quite often. I'm not shy about saying it publicly, but, you know, it starts with our editor-in-chief. Listen, he's a great journalist. He occasionally will write a good column once in a while, you know, informative, great writer. I know he doesn't like me. I don't like him whatsoever. I think it's more about not like each other's politics. And, well, you know, it's testosterone. That's all there is to it. But I respect Max. You know, I don't like him, but I respect him, and I think that's enough for me. Same goes with Jay Lassiter. Again, a very talented writer, very good sources, a great journalist. I don't like him personally whatsoever. I hate his political views. I think they're toxic. I think they're just, I don't know. They're just, I think, at times, very intellectually bankrupt. But, I mean, hey, he's entitled to his opinion, as am I. I know he doesn't like me. And once again, listen, again, that's just testosterone. It's just guys not liking guys for whatever reason, whether it's us being fickle or petty, whatever. You know, but I respect him. I respect his columns, and I do read them. So I certainly do urge you to do the same. Don't try to buy into his politics, though. I mean, that's just not, I think, healthy in any capacity. But, again, do check out his columns if you can. Listen, Fred Snowflack. He's been a guy out who's been made multiple appearances on this program. I love Fred. I think he's great. One of the best writers I've ever seen in New Jersey media. I certainly look forward to his columns. And, of course, you know, everybody at Insider NJ, of course, you know, Alan Steinberg, who drives me crazy sometimes with some of his views, but he's a very good columnist, and I love talking with him. He's a regular on the podcast, and I do enjoy his contributions. So again, I may not like all of my teammates, but I respect them, and once again, I'm proud to be a part of the Insider NJ team. So again, check out Insider NJ at insidernj.com. Of course, at the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a subscribe button. Click on that. You'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. And when you wake up in the morning and you're watching maybe the sports show like I do, I watch First Things First if I'm up early. Then I'll watch Undisputed on Fox Sports. Then I'll watch The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Occasionally I'll watch ESPN and I'll subject myself to losing brain cells and watching Get Up with Mike Greenberg and then First Take with Screaming A. Smith and Max Kellerman. And but as I'm doing all that stuff, folks, you know, I'm going through my phone, right? I'm checking my email. And sure enough, all I can say is when I do, I can always rely on the morning intelligence briefing being there waiting for me. So check it out. And of course, folks, it's the best journalism once again in the state of New Jersey, brought to you always by Insider NJ. And of course, you can check out archives from this podcast at www.insidernj.com/podcasts. And that's podcast, plural with an S. And again, can't say enough about how proud I am to be a part of Insider NJ. Folks, as a reminder, the opinions and views expressed here and every week on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, the staff, or our sponsors. And of course, folks, speaking of Insider NJ, you know, I just sort of, outlined again how proud I am to be a part of the Insider NJ team. Again, as I said, having played organized sports, I know the importance of getting along with teammates, or at least, you know, reaching a goal, right? You may not like your teammates all the time, but you work together for a common goal, and that's to make, again, in this case, Insider NJ the success that it is, and again, the perennial leader in political news in the state of New Jersey. I don't like all my teammates, but there are some teammates that I do like. And as a matter of fact, speaking of the teammates I do like, and he's a regular on this podcast, folks, he's a great journalist, kind of drives me crazy sometimes with some of his views, but you know what? We have a great dialogue, and I think he's the biggest Brooklyn Nets fan that I know anywhere in New Jersey. Folks, welcome back to Great Alan Steinberg here on Politically Direct. What's going on, brother?
I'm delighted to be on with one of my favorite teammates of all time, Fernando Uribe. He's a regular Pee Wee Reese. He is the captain. He is a great captain of our radio team and our podcast team, and he very rarely misses out on an opportunity to make a clutch hit. And I can't say this, though. Nobody on any team resembles Kevin Durant last night. That was a classic, greatest single-game accomplishment I ever saw in a game of basketball.
You know, Alan, I can't disagree with you. As a basketball fan, I'll tell you right now, you don't need a PhD in coaching to know that that Milwaukee coach should be kicking himself. I mean, they let that game slip through their fingers. Listen, credit to the Nets. They came back, had some great contributions from Jeff Green. Certainly Kevin Durant was out of his mind last night, hitting every clutch shot possible, facilitating, which a lot of people thought he wouldn't be able to do. You know, he also had 10 assists. People forget that. And he also had, I think, obviously a triple-double. But the bottom line is, I mean, that if you're Milwaukee, Alan, you should be – what a disgraceful performance. I mean, short of the Houston-Golden State series a couple of years ago where Houston gave up an enormous lead in the conference finals, you're almost thinking Milwaukee is mentally broken. I mean, what a disgraceful performance. If you're Milwaukee, I mean, unbelievable. How do you give up a lead like that? I mean, it's just – it boggles the mind, Alan.
Well, Coach Bud is getting just absolutely clobbered on the radio face today.
He should.
Oh, he's getting incompetent. Annihilated.
I
think you're right. And I have one worry, though. You know, and I am the biggest Brooklyn Net fan you know, or that anyone knows for that matter. But I'm worried about Game 6 for one reason. Durant has to feel totally gassed at this point, exhausted. And he played all 48 minutes. I never saw anything like that in my life. And it's going to be tough for him to play at that level for, let's say, more than 30 minutes of this Game 6. But I want them to win this Game 6. I don't want to risk a Game 7. My emotions are in my throat every game.
Yeah, especially
you know,
with the fact that
I got to say this, Fernando. You're mm-hmm. a great judge of media. I have to say that outside the NFL, the NBA is the greatest sports media show on earth right now. It has absolutely made baseball a secondary sport. And I was one of the great baseball fans of all time.
Yeah.
But there's mm-hmm. nothing that comes close to the NBA except for the NFL. And I'm not such an NFL fan anymore. I can watch the NBA all year round. It's an international sport. It's a great mm-hmm. television sport. And the warm-up shows, like what you see on TNT with Charles Barkley, Kenny Anderson, and Shaq,
it's
wonderful.
Yeah, no, listen, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think it's very entertaining. And, you know, I'm a big NFL fan. I'm a religious Cowboys fan. I love watching the NFL. I love the pregame shows sometimes. I think they tend to bloviate a little bit. But there's nothing more entertaining than inside the NBA with Ernie Johnson and the crew there on TNT. I mean, that's just – it's you almost look forward to the postgame just to hear what they have to say, the way they break down the games and the way that they
absolutely.
Sort of ridicule back to it. So – Definitely worth it. We'll see what happens, obviously. You know, next time I have you on, we'll see where the Nets are at. You know, we'll see, obviously, if they advance, and we'll see where this goes in the conference finals. But, Alan, good to have you on here. I wanted to ask you something real quick because I saw this on my Twitter. We have a bunch of topics to talk about today. But I had to laugh a little bit, not just because I think it's being a little fickle, but, you know, David Wallstein, the editor of New Jersey Globe, you know, I guess David, Uncle Dave doesn't, I guess he's not shy in taking shots at you on Twitter. I don't know if you saw that recently.
Well, what did he say? Did he take a shot at me? That's okay. I love when shots are taken at me. You know what that does
to
my analytics?
So apparently he screenshotted a caption of an article you wrote back in November of 2019. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you had written an article for Insider NJ, and the headline read, "Patrick could supplant Biden as Democratic frontrunner." Now, this is November of 2019.
I did think that at one time. That's true.
Yeah, no.
Well, that's true. I made a mistake in judgment. I don't deny that.
No, of course. And then, of course, Wildstein, just a few days ago, writes, quote, on Twitter, "Some good news for Jack Ciccarelli. Alan Steinberg, who is reliably wrong on just about everything, predicts a Phil Murphy win." Ouch.
Well, that's not true.
Alan Steinberg. What's that?
Well, that's great. I want him to take all the shots of me, and that'll get my analytics way up. But he's factually wrong. Last year, I had the best prediction record of anyone in New Jersey. I had Biden as the front runner all the way back in November of 2019, where I said that he would win because of the African-American vote. And I continued to hold to that. I also had, in terms of the election, I had Biden carrying Georgia, which very few predicted. I had the Democrats capturing the Senate and capturing the two Georgia seats, which almost nobody predicted. I had the Democrats in 2018 capturing the House of Representatives by winning 40 seats, and that was exactly what they won. So I'm not going to lower myself to get into a you-know-what contest with David Wildstein. But he's being silly, but he's also being factually inaccurate. No one relies on David Wildstein as being the guardian of what is factual. You know, so let him say that. I love when people take shots at me.
No, listen, Alan, I'm the same route. I mean, believe me, and I take a lot of shots all the time, especially being like one of the very few conservative journalists and commentators in New Jersey media. So trust me, I know what it's like to get hit from all sides. But I found it funny when, listen, let's be honest, I don't want to slander anybody, but I mean, let's be real, you know, Uncle Dave doesn't exactly have a lot to stand on, right, when it comes to credibility and character, right? Or am I wrong with that?
Well, not after Bridgegate.
let
him say what he's going to say. You know what that tells me? That tells me he's reading me. Good.
Yeah.
You know, I love to be read. You know, I love to be controversial. You know what the greatest thing is about my column? I was in politics as an active player for many years. I was the head of the Meadowlands Commission. I was Region 2 EPA administrator. I was on the State Ethics Commission. And I always had to watch what I would say. I didn't want to say the wrong thing. I didn't want to risk getting fired. I don't have to give a damn anymore. You know how liberating this is? This is the most fun I have had in my political life. I just give you a little of my inside my life, which I felt comfortable sharing with you, Fernando, even when we agree or disagree. I'm at a stage of my life, you know, I'm not a millionaire, but I'm not hurting either. I live comfortably. I have my pensions, and I'm able, if you can afford the standard of life that you need, you're a wealthy man. That's my view. So I don't have to work. I'm a person that can basically say whatever the hell he wants and not give a damn. And that's wonderful. I don't slander or libel anybody, so I don't have to worry about that. And so when David Wildstein plays in his sandbox and goes through life, he'll always have hanging over his head the cloud of Bridgegate. What do I care? I want him to say that stuff about me every week. That means he's collecting stuff of mine. That means he's reading it.
Absolutely. Now, listen, at the end of the day, I talk about this on my other media programs, my local Hudson County podcast, and then my studio show on Monday nights with Eyes on NJ News. I mean, hey, when I get a lot of vitriol for my opinions and my producers reach out to me Tuesday morning and say, hey, Jesus, all right, I'm going to send you some emails or forward you stuff, you know, check it out. Hey, at least you're watching. That's the way I look at it. I'm like, hey, at least you're watching the show.
There's only one thing that bothers me, this I admit to, and that's when somebody makes a blatantly anti-Semitic reference. That bothers me. Like someone said about me on air that I resembled, Joseph Goebbels in the bunker. I lost a quarter of my family in the Holocaust. You know, the Holocaust is something that I take literally every day. The Squirrel Hill Massacre, my family roots were in Squirrel Hill. I live with this every day. I know there's a lot of jealousy in me. I have to say that for my own ego, because I do write very well. I do express myself much better than the average person. I'm very widely read. I cannot, that Jack Cittarelli article that, David Wildstein made reference to, it got 6,000 hits. I want to pay tribute to Cittarelli. I'll tell you why. Well, I think he is going to lose badly, but he's a wonderful human being. I got to tell you something. Every time I write a negative article, he sends me a comment, Alan, you're going to owe me a steak dinner on election night. He's a great guy. He's a really good person. He plays politics. I don't like what he's doing with these silly attacks on Murphy, whether he's real Jersey or not. Not that I think it's an evil thing he's doing. I think he shows a certain amount of vitriol that does not become Jack Cittarelli, who's a really good human being. But, I say, I've endorsed Bill Murphy, but I love Jack Cittarelli for that. So that's the way politics should be. It used to be when I worked, for example, at the State House under Chuck Heitkamp, we'd go drinking with the Democrats every week. We had a ball. That's what politics should be. It's become too much vitriol. It's become too personal. And that's why I like writing about it rather than being in a bunker anymore.
Well, that's a fair observation, and I don't blame you. I think you've put in your time, as they say. You've paid your dues. You've cut your teeth. You've rolled up your sleeves. So, no one can blame you, Alan, for, I think, just wanting to take it easy more and just sort of do what you do best, and that's be a great writer. So let's get to that. Before we get to some of your columns recently, I wanted to pick your brain about this. It was reported by various news outlets, but New Jersey, apparently, has been anointed the best state to live in. And I'll sort of just quote an article here from the Jersey City Times. It's been talked about in other news outlets, but I'll just sort of read you real quick here a quick passage. It says, New Jersey's on a roll. Last month it was anointed the best state for pizza, which I agree. Now the state has been the butt of countless jokes and dissed as recently as last week by mayoral hopefuls, obviously, in other states, but it's been rated the best state to live in, according to the financial website WalletHub. So overall, New Jersey achieved a combined score.
That is what makes Jack Cittarelli's election as governor impossible. It's not anything he's done, although I do think he hurt himself being so aligned with Trump. But when the voters feel that things are getting better, you can't beat it.
All right, let's just look at some numbers here. So New Jersey had a combined score of 63.01, beating Massachusetts with 62.60, and then New York came in third at 61.63. Dead last was Mexico with a 38.6 rating. Now, of course, WalletHub compared the 50 states across five key dimensions, including affordability, the economy, education, health, quality of life, and safety. Each dimension was worth up to 20 points. Now, New Jersey did rank, and no surprise, 49th in affordability and 32nd in its economy. It did land at number one for safety, 5 for education and health, and 7 for quality of life. Alan, I have to tell you this. I read WalletHub every now and then. I don't think what they write is gospel. But I'll tell you something. I don't know who they polled. I don't know if it was Stevie Wonder. I don't know. But I'll tell you something. In terms of safety, there's a lot of cities in New Jersey, let me tell you something, I think that beg to differ. I think all residents in a lot of urban areas beg to differ here. In terms of education, that's fine. I think they have the best public schools in the country, not the best universities. And mind you, I work in higher education, so I'm not trying to cut my nose despite my face. But in terms of health and quality of life, they rank kind of high. Alan, I don't know. I don't know who the hell they're polling here. But this doesn't – I had to laugh when I read this.
Well, I'm not saying you're right or wrong, okay? I don't know the methodology of their poll, but I do believe this. We now have this poll. We have the Eagleton poll. That's two polls that show the perception of New Jerseyans that things are getting better, that we're on the right track. Now, whether we are or whether we're not, that's something people can discuss and debate. But as long as that perception is out there, that spells very good news for Phil Murphy and very bad news for Jack Cittarelli. You can't beat a perception like that, especially in a state like New Jersey. The Democrats have a voting registration edge of over 1 million votes. You're not going to defeat a Democrat statewide unless there is real anger at the Democrat Party, unless there's real anger at the incumbent, And that doesn't exist regarding Phil Murphy. You know, he's not a if people don't love him, a lot of people do love him, but he's basically a well-liked governor. Very few people are angry, per se, at him. And he's not going to lose unless something dramatic happens that I can't foresee, although things have happened before.
No, of course. And let's break that down, because obviously last week was primary week. And listen, I reached out to the Cherry campaign, and I spoke with one of their operatives, and I was very blunt because, A, Alan, like you, I'm not auditioning to be an operative. I'm not auditioning to run a campaign. I'm fine being an educator and a journalist. But I said what was perfectly obvious. Number one, you didn't get 50% of the vote. And I thought that for Jack, among Republicans, Jack had to score in the 55 or up or above percentage rate on primary. He did not do that. Over 110,000 people voted for the MAGA maniacs, Hersing and Phil Rizzo. Nice guys. Well, more Phil Rizzo. Hersing doesn't return a phone call, but at least Phil Rizzo is a gentleman with me. And then, of course, you had Brian Levine, the former Somerset County freeholder, coming in last. And I said what was obvious. Listen, you can't be bragging. You didn't get 50% of the vote. I get it. It's a primary. Sometimes Republicans don't come out to vote during primaries. But the bottom line is, and I said this to the operative when we spoke on the phone, and Alan, I mean, maybe you'll disagree with this, but, you know, the reason I think Jack has a puncher's chance, and for all the sports fans listening today, you'll sort of appreciate the analogy, I think he has a puncher's chance against Murphy, but the problem is this, and it's sort of twofold. Number one, you know, the New Jersey media apparatus, the institutions such as NJTV, which is now NJPBS, NJ Spotlight, NorthJersey.com, the Star Ledger, these aren't exactly media apparatuses that are really taking the governor to task. And a lot of things, and listen, let's be objective for a moment. I know you can be. I know I can too. That they haven't taken the governor to task on a few things. The Edna Mahan situation, you know, going back to the whole Katie Brennan, Al Alvarez thing, the fact that, again, listen, I mean, and I love Dr. Rand Paul. He's one of my favorite senators. But God bless Dr. Paul, because what we're learning based on the Freedom of Information Act now with emails, and I cringe to think of what other emails we're going to find about Anthony Fauci and what we're going to learn about this guy. But it just seems like a lot of these things, you know, David Cruz at NJTV and Tom Moran and these other people, they're not calling out the governor on some things that they should. And that's a big uphill battle for Jack, for any Republican, I think, because the New Jersey media apparatus is so entrenched with the Democratic Party. That's how I look at it. What say you?
Well, I have to take exception to one media outlet, and that's New Jersey, Insider New Jersey, because we really have taken shots at people of both political parties, and I'm very proud of that. I'll tell you another outlet that is gaining prominence that I love doing, because I think Laura Jones is one of the finest journalists I've ever seen in the business, and I appear on her show now on NJ On Air. And internet television, as you know, may well be the wave of the future, because young people don't want to have to pay for cable, and they go to individual programs on the internet. I'm on there a lot, and we take shots at people of both political parties. But there are, as you suggest, Democrat-leaning papers and other outlets that have not taken shots at the governor. I know that, for example, 101.5 for years has taken shots at Democrat incumbents. It's a factor, but I don't think it's the biggest overall factor. I'll tell you this about 101.5. When it came to Jim Florio, they were really destructive of his campaign. They were a major factor in his defeat, and they were going after him every single day.
Alan, to be fair, I hate to cut you off. I mean, Jim Florio deserved it. Jim Florio was atrocious. Let's be honest about it. He was atrocious.
Well,
man.
I have a different view of Florio. I'm not a defender or an attacker of his. I've developed a friendship with him. I don't think, let me say this, had he not raised the income tax, let me rephrase that. He could raise the income tax, and he could have raised the income tax and still been reelected, whether one agrees with an income tax hike or not. I'm just talking about the politics of all. What really cooked his goose was raising the sales tax. And there was one other factor that resulted in his defeat. that few people focus on. He did one thing that I really favored, and that was school takeover in Newark. However, Sharp James, who was the mayor at that time, who was the most powerful political force, was vehemently opposed to school takeover, so much so that he did everything possible to undercut Florio. He really did. Now, the night before the election in 1993, sometimes I can jumble the years as we all can. In 1993, I had a call the night before the election, and that call was from Frank Holman, who was the greatest street politician I ever met. I love Frank Holman. And he had been the Republican executive director and also the Republican state chair under Tom Kaine. He said, "We're going to win tomorrow," he said, "because Newark is not going to vote." I said, "How do you know Newark is not going to vote?" And Frank was a street politician who had a sense of it, how much enthusiasm there was there, how much activity was taking place in Democrat headquarters, how many signs were up was even an indicator. And in that election, basically Sharp James deliberately went to sleep with the Democrat machine, as a result of which Jim Florio only captured Essex County by 26,000 votes. And he lost the election by 26,000 votes. The margin for a Democrat there normally should be 60,000. Had he gotten the normal margin that a Democrat should get in Essex County, he would have been reelected. And the reason he didn't get that margin was because of Newark school takeover. So the situation with Florio was a much more complex one than is normally perceived. That was interesting. So, again, there is media bias. I don't deny it, but I don't think it is the major overriding factor. I think the biggest problem that Jack Cittarelli has, and again, he's a fine human being, he has a problem that people are not angry. He's trying to get people to be angry, and it's not going to work for him. When you say he has a puncher's chance, I think that's a good way of saying it. But what is a puncher's chance? A puncher is when your opponent leaves an opening for you, and I don't think that opening is going to happen unless something unforeseen happens.
Well, again, Alan, and the reason I say a puncher's chance, and I love the, sort of the segue you did with your analogy about sort of like an opening there, I just think that, again, you know, going back to – and let me just say this about Insider and Jay. I mean, obviously, I'm sure I'll piss off Pete when I say this. I mean, I'm really the only conservative voice on Insider NJ. I think by and large, I mean, you know, you notwithstanding, but, and Fred isn't, I don't think Fred really leans anywhere, but Insider NJ is kind of typically viewed as a pretty liberal online publication. That's what
it depends who the writer is.
Fair enough. But I think by and large, even, and these are people that even who identify as Democrats that I know, friends of mine or progressives, will tend to say to me, yeah, you're kind of like the only conservative voice, an insider. And I'm like, well, you know, I think what I'm doing is different than the columnist per se. Like, you're writing columns, Alan. You know, Fred's writing columns.
Right.
You know,
I'm an opinion journalist.
Yeah. I mean, I'm an opinion journalist too. I just, mine's more audio and video than sort of written.
Right.
But, you know,
I'm a print medium.
Yeah. I mean, people get on Insider, obviously, for Max and for Jay, who, you know, pretty left guys, you know, and I think that's sort of where maybe the notoriety from Insider comes from. And again, I'm not saying this to smear anybody. It's just
Well,
true.
Let me tell you where I think some of the unfair attacks come from. And I wonder if this doesn't play a role with David Wildstein, okay? Mm-hmm. I don't see him going after George Norcross very hard. I see him basically playing pity-pat with him. In terms of, you know, going after the established machine, the George Norcross machine, this is something that Max Pizarro has not feared to do, and I give him enormous credit for that. I've gone after Norcross on some of my articles. That takes a lot of courage. And, you know, you've seen that in Insider. That has nothing to do with political ideology. That has to do with, you know, integrity in government, ethics in government.
Sure.
And Insider has not feared to do that. And for that, I've been very proud of Insider. And that goes way beyond liberal, conservative, Republican, or
sure.
Democrat.
No, listen, that's a fair observation. But again, just sort of going back to the premise, when it comes to, I think, what Cittarelli is trying to do and get people angry, I think there are segments of the state that are angry. And Alan, I mean, case in point, I mean, look what we've uncovered or at least what's been made public, right, by the Freedom of Information Act. We've seen some emails about Anthony Fauci. Thankfully, people like, you know, Rand Paul, great senator down south, in taking, you know, Anthony Fauci to task when you see him on those televised hearings. That's what?
That's at the federal level. It's not a state issue.
No, I get that, but it sort of trickles down, doesn't it? Because these governors kind of took their 2 cents or took their guidance from what they saw at the federal level, and right, we saw.
But I don't think people feel now. The Fauci business is basically focused on whether he his affiliate subsidized the research going on in Wuhan, China, and that still has not been confirmed. It's the issue has been raised, but not confirmed. But no one feels that he was wrong about the vaccine. No one feels that he was wrong in insisting that we try to achieve herd immunity. And now both parties, pretty much bipartisan, agree that the vaccine has been the key. So nobody, in terms of his handling of the pandemic, is going to say, oh, there's Anthony Fauci issues and that affects how Phil Murphy handled the vaccine. Nobody's going to draw that connection. If someone does, I'd say very few people will. Yeah, I don't think he's. I'll tell you where he benefits.
Fair.
I'll tell you where he benefits from the federal government. New Jersey's surplus is exploding, and a lot of it is due to the Rescue Act funds to the states. Anytime a governor has a surplus like that, he wins. And the interesting question over the next few weeks is going to be, what are they going to do with those surplus funds?
And that's the big concern, Alan, because we all know, you know, Jersey loves to take in a dollar and they like to spend two. And that sort of brings me to my next point here where, I mean, listen, politically intelligent people like you and I will sort of break this down. And then maybe like the common New Jersey voter might not sort of connect the dots. But, you know, again, the surplus we're talking about right in the present day is, you know, it's afforded by the federal government, and it's not like the legislature, which is run by Democrats, has enacted any policies that would ever get us in a surplus. So, I mean, that's due in part to the federal government.
I agree
with
you,
New Jersey. Yeah.
But that doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just talking about politics.
Sure,
I'm not saying you're right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But politically, I very rarely have seen an administration of either party make a political mistake as to how that money is spent. And believe me, with the concurrence of Steve Sweeney in the Senate, you know, in the Assembly Speaker as well, and Governor Murphy's administration, they will find a way to spend that money in a way that fiscally and politically benefits the Democrat Party. And that's going to be
absolutely a
further factor in their behalf.
Oh, no, absolutely. And listen, kudos to the legislators like Mike Testa and others that just want transparency in how it's going to be spent. And it seems like,
I don't disagree with them on that.
You know, and unfortunately, you know, whether it's Senate President Sweeney or Coughlin, the Assembly Speaker, you know, I think it's – this is what I think annoys people about politics in general, whether it's New Jersey or any other state, where you're not seeing this transparency from a legislature. Because we want to know, because let's be honest. I mean, I could say it in my sleep. Let me guess. You'll see some sweetheart deal to some of the unions. You will see, we'll see the legislature and Governor Murphy want to coddle illegals because that's what they love doing that. Let's be honest. They love doing it. We'll, instead of any property tax relief, which again, you know, we have the highest in the country, and it just seems
I think
you know,
will
we'll
see some property tax relief. No,
I
disagree
so.
With that. I'm almost certain.
Well, I mean, I would hope
I'm not saying it'll be of a permanent nature, but I think
we will
see some sort of tax relief payment increase being made. That almost always happens. They're not going to lose an opportunity to do that.
No, absolutely, and I would hope so. And I think that, you know, that – listen, whether it's State Senator Testa or Bucco – or Panaccio, or Assemblyman DePhillips. I mean, it's important to want transparency to see how these dollars are spent. And again, it sort of goes. And again, it takes me back to my original premise. You know, unfortunately, the media institutions in New Jersey aren't really sort of banging the drums on this. They should be writing columns every day. They should be screaming from the hilltops. And the problem is that they're not doing that. And I think that's where New Jerseyans like you and I probably get frustrated with the fact that, like, the big, big sharks in the ocean, media-wise, aren't really raising a stink about this. They'll raise a stink about other things that, quite frankly, don't have merit. But something like this, Alan, I think really this is where they should kind of roll up their sleeves and say, hey, we need transparency in Trenton with this surplus. Are we going to get it, you know, and demand it? I don't see that coming from these institutions, Alan, and that's disappointing, bro.
Well, I agree they should be demanding transparency, but I'm taking a very detached view on this issue. And my focus now is not so much on the rights and wrongs of what is happening. My focus is what is the likely political impact. And I think the political impact is going to be a huge positive for Governor Murphy. I don't see any possibility of him losing due to the surplus. I see the surplus as being a further figure that propels him to a landslide.
Well, again, and speaking of that, again, and in your recent column, obviously, you know, you sort of break down the numbers here. And, you know, again, getting back to Cittarelli, I just think that, you know, what he's trying to do, I think, is get people angry. And I agree with that. I think that's a smart tactic. I think there are pockets of the state that are angry in the sense of how lethargic the pace was to open up New Jersey. Again, across the river yesterday, you know, Governor Cuomo is doing dancing circles about, oh, reopening New York. This jerk should have opened the state months ago, you know, and Cuomo is, you know, dancing around last night. It was sickening. I think there are pockets of the state, though, Alan, that are still upset with Murphy that, like, it took this long. And you know what? I mean, maybe it's apples and oranges, but I'll tell you, you know, and maybe I'm biased about this, but let me tell you, when Joe Biden called, you know, the state of Texas cavemen and Neanderthals, you know, guess what? Governor Abbott got it right, and Governor DeSantis got it right, too.
He is a Neanderthal, Governor Abbott. I think that the Texas Republican Party does to try to suppress the vote is an anti-democracy disgrace. I despise the Republican Party of Texas. I was an activist in the Republican Party for years, but that party is a despicable group of vote suppressors.
Well, Alan, I
loathe Governor Abbott.
No, but no one's talking about vote suppression in this case. We're talking about the president had the audacity to call Texas Neanderthals for the way they went about reopening the state. And guess what? Governor Abbott got it right. DeSantis got it right. And that's the problem. And again,
I don't know how right they got it. There's a lot of dispute about DeSantis. There's a lot of dispute about the impact on him.
Look, when you talk about
pockets, yeah, but let me answer something you said. You said there are pockets that are angry with Governor Murphy. Yeah, there are, but these pockets are already strong Republican pockets. That's not what Jack Cittarelli needs to win. He needs to convert a huge number of independents, and that's not there.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But again, just sort of getting back to the point about the way that COVID has been addressed or handled, and again, I just go back and, again, whether it's the state apparatus, and now we'll go to the federal apparatus, you know, the liberal media is not going to ever admit they were wrong. But guess what? Again, when the president calls Texas Neanderthals for the way they handled COVID, and guess what? Cases have not spiked. They had a full park on opening day in Texas for the Rangers. They've done everything opening up a lot sooner. And it seems like the liberal media has egg on their face. They don't want to admit they were wrong. They don't want to admit that DeSantis and Abbott did it right. And that's the problem,
Alan.
That's why people get pissed off at the media.
I will never use the word handling right when it comes to Abbott. Look what happened with the power outage. That was the most disgraceful maladministration I ever saw in my life.
Okay.
The man is
Fair.
A disgrace. He's
Fair.
An incompetent. He's vile. I won't give him credit for anything.
Well, Alan, that's fair about power outages, but, I mean, again, when it comes to looking at COVID and compared to these blue governors, Lamont, Cuomo, Whitmer, Newsom, Johnson, I think that's his name, in Pennsylvania, it's funny where whether it's here, again, whether it's statewide media or federal, they're never going to admit they were wrong. And guess what? Like,
well, who's to say they were wrong? I don't think they were wrong. I think that there was a much greater threat from COVID to them than there were in other states because of the fact that New York, New Jersey was the great gateway to people mm-hmm. coming into this country who are carriers of the disease. We were much more threatened. We mm-hmm. had to do these drastic measures, and we did them. And I think on the whole, our outcome was much better, much more healthy than it could otherwise have been. I'm not going to admit we were wrong, because I don't think we were.
Well, Alan, but for a moment, do you think the liberal media probably doesn't want to admit that, you know, again, going back to sort of the president's characterization of Texas, like, called them Neanderthals, and the liberal media sort of applauded that.
Well, he is a Neanderthal.
And cheered him on. Well,
he is a Neanderthal. Okay. He's an evil man, Governor Abbott.
No, Alan,
I would
I get
him much
that.
Worse than that.
Well, no, Alan, I get that. But, again, like, the liberal media sort of cheered on the president and said, oh, wow, look at the president calling Texas. And again, we're looking at cases that didn't spike, and look how they did it differently. That's the only thing I'm trying to sort of bring to light here.
He's one of the worst governors I've ever seen in my life.
Okay.
I think calling him a Neanderthal is a compliment to him.
Well, again, I just think that, you know, there's a perception out there that, you know, and again, what we're learning right now with these emails is just the tip of the iceberg. I cringe to think about what else is going to come out, right, in terms of Fauci.
We don't know yet.
What do you know? No, exactly. I mean, I cringe already at what we've seen. And, you know, when senators like Rand Paul and others want to get Fauci under oath in front of Congress, I'd love to see it. I'd love to. This is a guy.
Yeah,
who,
but Rand Paul is not exactly a person of tremendous credibility. And
well,
his father,
Alan,
was one of the most evil men. His father was one of the most evil men I ever saw. I got to tell you something. From these libertarian mm-hmm. types, I had more anti-Semitic personal threats than you could believe.
Okay,
there
and
are
that's
some bad apples in that group.
And I'm sorry that happened. And it's unfortunate that should not have happened to you. And I feel bad about it. But I mean, it'll be interesting to see if there's enough congressional outrage, and if we can get Fauci under oath, and you know, if we can get, you know, somebody with some credibility medically to, like, you know, question him under oath. I mean, again, if you saw that interaction between Paul and Fauci during those congressional hearings, I mean, they were entertaining, but they were like, wow, thank God for Rand Paul, because nobody on CNN.
I thought Fauci gave as good as he got.
Yeah, that's fair.
I do have an admiration for Fauci, because he's a mm-hmm. skilled epidemiologist who could have made a lot more money on the outside, but he devoted his mm-hmm. life to government service. I have a lot of respect for him for that.
I
think the bad mistake he made, was regarding the mask. He should have advocated the mask much earlier than he did.
Well,
he's
again,
not flawless. I'm not saying that.
No, of course. And again, and we'll see what happens if and when more emails are leaked and provided because of the Freedom of Information Act. I think this is definitely a story we'll definitely want to keep an eye out for. But getting back to New Jersey, though,
well,
Alan,
it should be covered.
No, absolutely. I mean, again, we'll see how honestly and openly it is in the media, but we'll see. But getting back to New Jersey, though, obviously, you know, that's my beef with the Cittarelli campaign. I just think that they're taking swings and they're missing. And I don't, again, it's June. It's 5 months away. I think that people have a really short attention span in New Jersey. The summer's here. People are out. They're day drinking. They're going out to ball games. Case in point, you know, Friday, not that it matters because the Yankees are atrocious, but it's good to see that whether it's Yankees or Mets here in New York, we'll see full ballparks again. People have things to do, vacations, going to see relatives. So I just think that obviously this campaign is going to be in the rear view for a few months. And I'm, like anything else, Jack, you know, when it comes to Jack, Alan, I just think that people probably start paying attention after Labor Day, and that's bad news for Cittarelli.
I agree with you. And, again, you used a very accurate description when you called it a puncher's chance, because if you have a puncher's chance, you don't go about swinging wildly with crazy stuff like whether Phil Murphy is really New Jersey or not. You look for your shots. A great punch, an example of that, this is a fight that I must be the only person who remembers it. When Ingemar Johansson knocked out Floyd Patterson, technical knockout, round 3, June 26, 1959, the first two rounds, Johansson did basically nothing. He just jabbed, a very ineffective jab. And the third round, mm-hmm. he saw that Patterson was widening the gap between his left and right hands, and he shot a straight right hand right through, and it knocked Floyd into dreamland. He was He didn't know where he was. He thought he had knocked down Ingo, and Ingo proceeded to knock him down seven times, and referee Ruby Goldstein stopped the fight. Now, the thing is with Ingo is he looked for the opening. If Jack Cittarelli wants to win, he has to be very careful, not take wild swings. He has to look for the opening, and if he finds the opening, then fire his right hand in. But they're not doing that. They're fighting more like wild swings that are flailing away that isn't hitting anything but air.
You know, absolutely, absolutely. And again, I know that the Cittarelli campaign announced that on June 30th, they will make public who their lieutenant governor running mate will be. We've heard a lot of speculation, everyone from State Senator Holly Schapese to others. What are your sources telling you about who Jack may select?
I don't have – you know, it's funny. I have thought of pressing Jack on that, and I think he would. By the way, tell me, give me an idea confidentially. I haven't done that for several reasons. I don't know how much – it's interesting, but I don't know how much the lieutenant governor matters, or whether it was a close election or not. And I'm not sure what his thinking is. You know, there's a number of ways that he could determine a lieutenant governor. One would be sort of a novelty pick. He could try to pick some – Democrat who was of an independent stripe. He could try to pick some captain of industry. He could try to pick some woman, although the problem with picking a woman is if he picks a pro-life woman, that may alienate pro-choice Democrats. So I don't know what he's going to do. It is interesting. I'm following it closely, but I don't have a clue. I don't claim to have a clue.
No, I mean, listen, it'll be interesting. I mean, I'm just going by what I'm reading in different outlets. It doesn't seem to be a significant favorite right now. I mean, it's 2 weeks away, so I'm assuming the Cittarelli campaign is doing their vetting. I'm sure that they are looking through everybody possible, whether it's a woman, whether it's a Latino, whether maybe it's a person of color, who knows. It'll be interesting. Alan,
I've never discussed this with her. I know her well, but I've never discussed this. But my inkling would be that she would not be inclined to accept it because if she does, she gives up what is almost a certain Senate victory. And she does, mm-hmm. I think, in the long run, want to be a gubernatorial candidate. And if she gives mm-hmm. up that Senate seat and she loses, as she would be likely to lose as a lieutenant governor candidate for Jack Cittarelli, she really mm-hmm. hurts her long-term prospects for the governorship. So my guess, like I say, I have not discussed it with her, would be that she would mm-hmm. not be inclined to accept it.
Well, listen, I'm with you on that. I think that's a really good outlook. Alan, let me ask you this. Being reported this week, NJPBS will be airing a special commemorating the life of Nick Acosella, former editor of PolitiFacts, starting back in the 1990s. Nick provided this weekly report in New Jersey politics, and you know, he was a big contributor in statewide media for a very, very long time. He even hosted a very informative show called Pasta and Politics that shown cooking while interviewing some of New Jersey's political establishment. He did die last year at the age of 77. I don't recall if it was COVID related, but his passing, I think, you know, saddened a lot of people who relied on him for political news. Any interactions with Nick in your time, and any
he was a wonderful he was a wonderful good friend of mine, and every time I would make his winner list, I felt it was a real honor. He was a wonderful friend. I will tell you the most humorous aspect of my relationship with him. I used to call him and talk about politics at length, but there was never a conversation where we didn't talk sports. Now, he was a real expert on baseball and boxing, and I am just a boxing lunatic, but I grew up in Pittsburgh, and the 1960 Pirate victory in the World Series was something that I will never forget, that home run by Bill Mazeroski, October 13, 3:36 p.m. He homers off Ralph Terry. The Buccos win 10-9. The city of Pittsburgh goes wild. I'll never forget it. You know, it feels like yesterday. Well, for Nick, as a Yankee fan, and this always killed me about Yankee fans, they couldn't stand to lose once. They've won 27 World Series. That's more than twice their nearest competitor, which are the St. Louis
Cardinals.
Yeah, I'm
spoiled. But yeah, I'm spoiled.
But
I'm
because
spoiled.
They lost that World Series, I'll never forget what Gino Cimoli said. I love Gino. He He got the last run for the Dodgers in Brooklyn and the first on the West Coast for the Los Angeles Dodgers. But Gino Cimoli was in the locker room. Bob Prince went over to interview him, and Gino said, beat them, Bucks. Ah, you can't beat the Buccos, he said. They broke all the records, and we won the game. It was true. The Yankees got 55 runs, the Pirates 27. He said, and we picked up the larger checks, and everyone was laughing at Gino. But it was a killer for a lot of the guys in the Yankees. I mean, Mickey Mantle sat in the locker room with Yogi Berra. He said, "What? For goodness sake, what happened? We killed these guys. We beat them 16-3, 10-0, and 12-0." And Yogi Berra said, "We lost to the damnedest team you ever saw in our life." And Nick was a true Yankee fan. He never got over it. And none of the other Yankee fans did either. And I used to laugh, and I said, Nick, you couldn't stand to lose once. But he was a lovable guy. We would talk about famous boxing matches. The thing I loved about Nick is that he was like – he reminded me also of Peter Weiss, who was a great journalist who covered Hudson County for years. I love Hudson County politics. I really deepened my love of Hudson County politics when I was the head of the Meadowlands Commission. Because Hudson County is like a separate state unto itself.
Yes,
it's got a unique political culture. And I love the energy. What I love about Hudson County, I love high energy places. It's wonderful to walk around the Latino communities of Hudson County. I remember when I was at the Department of Commerce, Gil Medina had me as the chair designate of the Urban Enterprise Zone Authority. And I had so many good friends in Hudson County, one of them in particular, Bernie Kenny, just one of the great state senators I knew. But you had Union City, West New York with Albio Series, North Bergen, with Nick Sacco. When these towns got, Urban Enterprise Zone designations, these are high-energy towns. These are towns of real fighters in a very best sense of the word. And Nick knew Hudson County. He knew the culture of Hudson County. I loved Hudson County. I used to love reading Peter Weiss's articles, Nick Acicello's articles. I couldn't get enough about Hudson County, and I miss him for a number of reasons, but that's one of them. He really got it, and he was a real Jersey guy in the very best sense of the word.
Yeah, no, he was. And a quick baseball note, listen, Alan, I'm spoiled as a Yankee fan. I mean, 40 pennants and still only 27 titles. There should have been more titles, but, I mean, hey, that's just the Yankees. You know, we're never happy with just, 40 pennants. I mean, there are teams that haven't even won 4 pennants. So we're pretty spoiled. I'm not going to lie about that. But as it pertains to Nick, I had the chance to meet Nick on a few occasions, a real gentleman. You know, his passing last year really stung, I think, for not just the journalistic community in New Jersey, but I think in general. You know, he was a gentleman. He was a guy that, his passing really stung. And, shout out to Michael Aaron, who's a friend of mine. We text each other quite often.
Great guy.
We text every so often. And I look at Michael as probably the dean of New Jersey journalism. Like, he's definitely on my Mount Rushmore, for sure. And whenever I talk to Michael offline, we text each other, I always pay tribute to Michael, because what I try to do, Alan, whether it's hosting this show or hosting other shows, I've watched Michael for years, and what I try to do is emulate his interview style. I mean, nobody can. I mean, Michael's an original, but what I try to do, and I tell him all the time, like, I work really hard to try to be as good an interviewer as you are, Michael. And I say this to him often. I'm like, if I can be 1/8 of the interviewer you are, Michael, then I'm doing something right. And he's always been very gracious and being like, well, that's very kind of you. Thank you. And I'm looking forward to seeing Michael Irons' program next week, when next Wednesday night at 8:00 on PBS.
It's on tonight.
It's on tonight. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's correct. Yes, tonight. Yes, that's right. I'm just looking at
I plan to do, because I'm an NBA fan, I plan to record it and watch it after the NBA games. I'll be up late.
Probably. I'll probably do that, too. I'll probably be watching the Sixers in Atlanta to see what happens. But definitely, I think, a great show that people should not miss. And I'm sure it'll be on the replay on the NJPBS's website. But
no question about it.
Yeah, definitely. Getting back to primary
Michael
day,
Aaron
quick,
is the dean.
Yes, he is.
Michael
Aaron's
the dean. He's wonderful.
Yeah, I call him all the time. When I've had him on this show, I called him the dean of New Jersey journalism. He's on the Mount Rushmore, for sure. Alan, getting back to some primary results, obviously, on legislative races,
A little bit of a surprise. Valerie Venere Huddle came up short in Bergen County. You know, a lot of people thought that race was going to be closer, but it sort of, I don't want to say feeds the ammunition, but when you're not on the line, man, you're fighting a really uphill battle. And it seems like whether it was her or Assemblyman Holly in Union County, when you're not on the line, man, it's just, it's almost like a death. It's almost a state of execution, Alan.
Well, this was the year of the line. I was surprised that it wasn't closer also. But I think the other thing is that the endorsement of Loretta Weinberg was a real key for Gordon Johnson. Loretta, I'm friendly with her, even though our views are decidedly different on a lot of issues. But I have a lot of respect for Loretta, and I think her endorsement of Gordon Johnson had a major impact, particularly among women voters who otherwise might have been inclined to vote for Valerie Venere Huddle.
I'm with you. Weinberg's endorsement, obviously, I think, was almost like the kiss of death for the Huddle campaign. Remains to be seen whether or not she'll want to run as an independent. I doubt it. Same thing with Holly.
I doubt it.
It seems like they'll just sort of gracefully go into the night, as they say. And with that, you know, obviously goes their occupancy in the legislature. Let me ask you this, because I just – well, Monday night, and also recently on my Insider podcast here, Politically Direct, I had Assemblyman Brian Bergen out of Morris County, of the 25th Legislative District. And I sort of brought up this notion that, Alan, you know, the NJGOP is in real trouble. I don't think they're doing a very good job. I don't think they're doing a very good job in sort of mobilizing candidates. You know, this is a year where you would think that in some districts there should be some anger against Democrats. And it just seems to me that the NJGOP is being very complacent. They just want to save the seats that they have. They don't want to sort of gamble a little bit and invest some money into districts where if they run good, strong Republican candidates, maybe they can win some seats. Again, I'm not saying win majorities. I think New Jersey will never have a Republican majority in the legislature ever again. I think that's not possible. But, you know, maybe shaving into that lead where it's 25-15 in the Senate, it's 52-28 in the Assembly, you know, you would think that this is a year where maybe, you know what, try to make some strides, win a couple of seats, shave off the lead a little bit. I just think the NJGOP is being complacent. I think they're being lazy. And I've said this on the air multiple times on not just this show. I've said it on my Monday night show. And I've had some people from NJGOP reach out to me saying, hey, listen, you know, we don't appreciate you taking shots at us. And I'm like, well, number one, that's my job. Number two, I'm not auditioning to work for you guys because I have no interest in doing that. And three, I'm sorry, but, you know, the truth hurts. And you're not doing a good job of mobilizing candidates. And I think that is ultimately going to doom the Republicans, I think, in trying to win seats legislatively for the foreseeable future. I mean, am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong, and I will say this. Brian Bergen, he's a potential superstar. I really like him. His military record marks him as a true American patriot. I'm glad you had him on. But I think the problem with the Republican Party in New Jersey is that it is an entity in search of its soul. They've tried to be a Trumpist outfit the last few years. It's not working for them. Donald Trump is not popular in New Jersey. I'm a conservative in a traditional sense. I'm an Edmund Burke type conservative, Milton Friedman. I am very against racial or ethnic identity politics of the type that the Trumpists practice. And the question is, will the party go back to a more traditional, classical conservative way? I don't know if it will. I don't think the party has a sense of where the hell it's going. And that's been a problem with Jack. He had a clear identity back in 2017. I was thinking of writing an article, and I still think I'll write it. And the title would be, Could a New Jersey Republican Win as a Larry Hogan Type? I have tremendous admiration for Larry Hogan. He's a traditional center-right guy. He was very anti-Trump. And I sometimes wonder, maybe a Larry Hogan would have a hard time winning the primary. But if he won the primary, I think he could give a Democrat a real good race. So the party doesn't seem to know where the heck it's going. And I have another article that I have planned, and the title of the article is, Am I the Last Eisenhower Republican in New Jersey, because if what I am more than anything else is a Dwight David Eisenhower Republican. I think Eisenhower was the fifth greatest president we ever had. He was a great president. He was, in my view, next to Franklin Roosevelt, the greatest president of the 20th century. And I don't know why Republicans don't identify with him.
That's a fair observation. You know, as someone who also is a conservative, I think I'm very fiscally conservative. I mean, along some social issues, I tend to be, I think pragmatic, and I try to be commonsensical. I don't think it's, I just think when it comes to some social issues, I don't think it's about being conservative or liberal or progressive. I just think it's about being pragmatic and commonsensical. I think that's why a lot of people sort of say I'm a center right guy. I've been accused of being a rhino. I'm like, well, I'm not a Republican, so why would you call me a rhino?
Well, I've been accused of all these things.
Yeah, no, of course, absolutely. But it just seems, though, Alan, that and I said this on the air before, where, you know, if the Republican Party and the brain trust, right? And now, of course, you know, with Jack Chiarelli's win on primary day, obviously, Bob Hugin, former U.S. Senate candidate, was named the chair of the state party. I mean, listen, I've met Bob. He's a nice guy. You know, he's a gentleman to me. But I'm sorry. I mean, that's a really uninspiring pick. It's almost like a vanilla.
He ran one of the worst statewide Senate candidates in terms of effectiveness I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I would not have picked him as a state chair. I think Hugin is interested in the future run for governor is what he's interested in. I don't know that for a fact. I suspect that.
I mean, I don't know that either, but it just seems that, you know, what Republicans need to hammer home, and they just do a bad job, whether it's social media, whether it's in ads, whether it's in town halls. But, I mean, they need to sort of hammer home the realities of New Jersey. I mean, forget about that poll we talked about to start the show with, you know. But let's talk about the obvious. The reason New Jersey is in a fiscal mess is because one party's ruled the legislature for 20 years. The reason we have the highest property taxes in the country is because of one party. The reason that we coddle illegals in New Jersey the way we do is because of one party. I mean, I don't have enough fingers and toes, Alan, to list the things
of
why New Jersey's in a mess.
Mm-hmm. I think there's another factor, and actually this is something I had to give Chris Christie some credit for. I gave him credit for very little. Mm-hmm. But the reason for high property tax more than anything else is the high cost of education in our state. Now, we have wonderful schools. I'd rather pay too much for education than too little. But a lot of times the salary contracts that the NJEA gets for their members and for administrative personnel is above what it should be, and that pushes property taxes to a higher extent. The Democrats are always going to be a pro-NJEA party. The Republicans too often have actually gone soft on the NJEA. I gave Chris Christie credit for that. And that's a major, major factor. I know, for example, when I was on legislative staff, I wrote a memo once to one of the legislative directors about the NJEA, and the guy almost had a heart attack. He said, oh, if that leaks, you know what the NJEA is going to do to us? And I said, so what? You know, but... The fear of the NJEA is a lot of times greater than their actual power. But people do fear them.
No, you're absolutely right. Listen, at one time Steve Sweeney didn't fear them, obviously, I think when the NJEA was daring to run a candidate against them. But it just seems that the NJGOP doesn't do a good job in just sort of stating the obvious. And New Jersey's in a – you know, and it's a mess. Now, again, how effective that message resonates, I don't know, because, again, if you don't have sort of a ballsy type of chair that's really going to hammer this into the ground, then it's pointless. And I think that this is where they're going to put themselves in a bad position. And, you know, again, aside from what Chiarelli will be doing coming up during the debates in October, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting, his approach. I mean, listen, we still have 4 months to go until he has to debate Phil Murphy, and we'll see exactly where the state is economically. Again, we talked about it earlier. It's certainly the surplus that we have here in New Jersey is going to be interesting, how it's spent. And again, you know, listen, it almost seems like the governor and the legislature might give Jack some softballs, you know, when it comes to how the money is spent, and maybe that will merit some scrutiny. I just don't know if it's going to stick when Jack goes out there in an ad and says, oh, you see, we have this surplus, and look what Murphy and the legislature did. They wasted in these, you know, projects to, you know, appease the public sector unions or to in wasteful spending. I don't know if that's going to stick, though, Alan.
I think all they have to do is use part of that surplus to give a higher rebate to property taxpayers, and they're in. There's nothing. When Brendan Byrne in 1977 was running for re-election against Ray Bateman, and Byrne was behind Bateman for a long time during that race. He was behind by 7 points. And then they sent out the property tax rebate checks, and they were signed by Governor Brendan T. Byrne. That's all they needed to do, and he won that election in a landslide. Same thing holds true today in 2021. All you need to do is have those checks signed by Phil Murphy, and the voters go in, and they just cast their ballots and for the Democrats. And, you know, the effect of the man at the top being popular, it reminds me of a famous story about a big boss in New York. I think he was a boss in Brooklyn, Jaime Shorenstein. Now, Jaime Shorenstein was the boss of Brooklyn, and some of the local candidates were complaining that he wasn't helping them. He wasn't helping them with their get-out-the-vote activities, grassroots efforts. And he said to them, you know, you want to know what I'm doing? He said, you ever see the ship in New York Harbor that goes in towards the shore, and all the garbage follows in the wake of that ship? He said, well, the name of your ship is the USS Franklin D. Roosevelt running for re-election, and it's going to drag all the garbage in, and it's going to drag you in. Stop worrying. Well, that's the point. If the man at the top wins by a landslide, and I have no doubt that Murphy is headed in that direction, the ballgame's over from top to bottom.
Listen, it would sound like that's going to be the case. Again, 5 months to go, we'll certainly see what happens. Alan, let me ask you this, because we know that the governor is running once again with Lieutenant Governor Sheila Oliver. I'm not saying this to be mean-spirited, but she's getting up there in age. I have been hearing that she's had some health issues, which has been kept under wraps. Do you
right.
look at someone like Sheila Oliver?
I've heard the same. I don't know if it's true or not.
Yeah, no, I don't know either, but I mean, I'm trying to sort of confirm it. But the bottom line is, you know, should Governor Murphy win a second term, obviously he'll be done after two terms. Is there any chatter you hear about maybe Sheila Oliver stepping up after Governor Murphy, or do you think that if she does her 8 years as Lieutenant Governor, she might just sort of go off into the sunset politically?
I don't think she's going to be the candidate for governor. I think it's going to be Mikey Sherrill. And by the way, I've written this because I think the Republican Party has so alienated the African-American vote. I think the Republicans are going to have an extremely difficult time winning any statewide election for the next decade. I wrote that last summer. However, having said that, I don't think Mikey Sherrill is the overwhelming candidate the way everyone thinks. I don't think she's guaranteed a victory in the primary. She would probably start off as the front runner. I think most of the money Democrats, most of the Democrats who are big fundraisers, would be raising money on her behalf. But that doesn't guarantee anything. It'll be an interesting primary the Democrats have in 2025. It'll be an interesting Republican primary in that year also.
Absolutely. It'll definitely be something to keep an eye out for. Alan, before I let you go, man, you're always a delight to have on the show. I love our conversations. I think we have really productive dialogues. Again, no spoilers, but anything you want to sort of give us a little bit of a snippet in terms of what you're working on coming up soon?
Yes, I'm working on a column tonight. I hope to have it out tomorrow. The column is about Phil Murphy. I think he's on the verge of national stardom, and what his future outlook may be, and how Chris Christie, who was at national stardom at one point, how he lost it, and how today Chris Christie is in danger of becoming the next Harold Stassen, a guy who runs it over and over again until it becomes a joke. And I'm afraid that Christie may do that in terms of seeking the presidency again without any real hope of winning. He's kind of a legend in his own mind.
I agree with you. I mean, other than being fellow Cowboys fans, I don't really have a lot of positive things to say about Chris Christie.
I don't either.
You know, yeah. And again, he's a guy who I met, and you know, he's a very different Chris Christie in 2009 than the 2021 version. And you know, I think more people.
I was very friendly with him when he was the U.S. Attorney, and I was Region 2 EPA Administrator. we got along excellently. But times changed.
Absolutely. And, I mean, obviously it seems like he's a guy that should not be even considering running or even wasting a dollar for, you know, running for president. I think he should just keep being a contributor on ABC with George Stephanopoulos and that panel of clowns that's on there on Sunday mornings. I think that's where Chris Christie should stay. I mean, stay in your lane, Chris, you know, keep overseeing your institute, but listen, national office, no, I don't think so. Alan, it's always a pleasure to have you on here. I really respect your contribution. I think you and I have a good back and forth. I will make it a point as I'm clearing up the calendar to have you on my Monday night show, which streams live on Monday nights with Eyes on NJ News. Definitely want to have you on there in a video capacity, and we'll definitely talk some more politics. But listen, best of luck with your Nets. We'll see what happens. And, you know, listen, good to see people back in arenas and ballparks out doing things. And so stay healthy, brother. And by the way, before I don't want to forget this, happy Father's Day to you. And have a wonderful one.
Thank
with your family.
I had a wonderful day last Sunday. My family took me out to my – well, I'll send you pictures, you know, Fernando, of my family. There's two grandfathers that my granddaughter has, and last Sunday was my day, and they took me to the best kosher restaurant in Manhattan. It's an Italian kosher restaurant called Abita. I'm going to take you there sometime.
All right. Well, you know, I'll take you up on that offer, brother. But listen, stay healthy in the meantime. I love your contributions, and I should have the episode hopefully up later on tonight via insiderng.com/podcast. I'll make sure to get on Pete because sometimes Pete kind of takes his sweet time, and, you know, it kind of drives me crazy. But I'll get on him to make sure that the episode airs. And do me a favor, plug the episode on your Twitter, on your Facebook. I love
you
guys. I
do.
And I appreciate it. Stay healthy, and I'll talk to you again soon here on Politically Direct.
Take care, my friend. Bye-bye.
Take care, Alan. You too. Folks, what a great interview today with Alan Steinberg, fellow Insider NJ teammate and obviously a columnist. You should definitely read his work when you can. Very informative columns that you can check out on InsiderNJ.com. And you know, a lot of topics, folks, that we broke down today concerning the gubernatorial race, some primary races, some other national topics. So definitely a great interview with Alan Steinberg today. Well, folks, that's our show for this week. Again, if you ever miss episodes of Politically Direct and you are home or you're on the beach or you're on subway or you're on a light rail or a ferry and you're trying to think about, hey, what podcast can I listen to? Hey, don't sweat it. Go to www.insidernj.com/podcast. That's plural, podcast with an S. And you listen to, again, the what I would argue is the best political podcast in New Jersey media right now each and every week. So definitely check that out. If you have a topic or issue you want to hear about in the coming weeks, we'll write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirect, and more importantly, follow my own Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. And, of course, also hit me up on Twitter, folks, because it's growing. Tons of new followers each and every day, and I really do appreciate the support I get on Twitter and Instagram and also on Facebook, folks. Make sure you like Politically Direct on Facebook. 1,000 likes and counting. And certainly, again, without you, my loyal listening audience, this wouldn't be possible. So the success that I enjoy with Politically Direct is owed completely and entirely to you, because without you guys and gals, this show, again, would not be popular. So, again, I'm immensely grateful, and I'm quite humbled by your support. And you know me, I'm not the most humble person. I'm probably the least humble person you'll ever meet. So, but I'm humbled when I see all the support I get for Politically Direct. And of course, folks, make sure you check out Insider NJ every single day by going to www.insidernj.com for the absolute best coverage of today's political scene in the state of New Jersey. I can't say enough about the great work brought to you by every single morning, afternoon, and evening by the contributions of Insider NJ, the great columns. Check them out when you can. Make sure you like Insider NJ on Facebook and also follow them on Twitter. Folks, as a reminder, again, I want to wish all the dads out there a very happy Father's Day, especially to my dad and my uncle, two incredible men, two men that I admire, two men that I worship, and two men that I just look at as incredible examples of upstanding men of character and integrity. So, you know,
I'm really, really lucky to have two dads like that in my life. So, again, folks, enjoy it with you and your own. Have a safe weekend. Enjoy Father's Day weekend. Go catch a ball game. You know, maybe go out day drinking and get some sun. You know, vitamin D is important, folks, right? We've been indoors for a while. So get that vitamin D when you're outside. Again, folks, stay healthy. We appreciate you tuning in here. And always remember, it's real. It's here. It's the four time. I'll say it again. The four time politically direct. I'll see you next week here, folks, on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.